Good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to the latest edition of Future Sox Hot Takes and Haters, the MLB-centric version of a Future Sox podcast. It is Wednesday, November 19th, and you know we're in the throes. We're fully in the throes of the offseason right now. My name is Danny Miller. The gentleman you see sitting on the opposite side of the screen from me is my partner in crime, as usual, the young and talented Jacob Thome. How you doing tonight, Jacob?
We're hanging in there. Enjoying this off-season start and excited for what's going on and not excited for the cold weather.
Yeah. I'm with you. Winter's not my favorite time of the year. I've been fighting off a double ear infection for a couple weeks here now. Apparently, antibiotics aren't doing a trick, so I got to go back for another round of doctor appointments. Yay. Figure that whole situation out. Yeah, dude, double ear infection. My head feels like it's going to explode half the time. So I think it all was created from traveling, flying with just really bad sinuses. And, you know, it's kind of spiraled from there. But anywho, you know, we've got a lot of White Sox content to cover here. I was getting a little slow for a couple weeks there during the postseason and even early on into the offseason. But, man, Chris Getz kind of lit the fire on the hot stove here the last couple of days. And, you know, if you'll notice on my, on my teaser for and the headliner, the thumbnail for this show, you know, I put a couple of topics up there that we're going to talk about tonight. Free agents being one of them, which, you know, there hasn't really been any free agent signings, but there's always rumors, right? So we'll get into that a little bit. But, man, I want to take some time to kind of focus on what's happened just in the last, 24 to 36 hours here. So, let's talk about some of the 40-man moves and some of the trades. And I think we should probably start with the trades. And I'm going to let you go ahead and jump in on that if you have some thoughts. Let's first talk about, the trade that brought back Everson Pereira to the White Sox. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was a weird trade. In terms of how it was broken, as originally the news broke, and it was like, all right, it's Yoandris Gomez for Pereira. And then there was about an hour later that Steven Wilson was added in the deal. So I think it's a good trade. I understand there was some, I don't want to say hype with Yoandris Gomez, but I think there was some of this fan base that thought there was potential for him to be a contributor in 25. And I get he had some solid outings there towards the back end of the year. But you know, when you're looking at the entire landscape, I think he was either going to be your fifth starter or your worst bullpen arm, if anything. And I don't know what they give out of that. So, moving him for a guy like Pereira, who has a ton of upside, I shouldn't say a ton of upside, but, has certainly a higher floor than Yoandris Gomez, higher ceiling. If I could get words out of my mouth, that'd be great.
Well, I thought you were going to do much better tonight since you're not hiding behind your microphone. I noticed that right away, but sorry. And sorry for being so loud. Do my, getting my face in my microphone there for a minute.
But here we go.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see you, man. Clean shaven and, not hiding yourself. I got to poke fun at you, man.
Of course. That's how I prefer it. I get the trade. I think it's a fine trade. I think Pereira is your fourth outfielder unless Robert's traded, which obviously there were some quotes today from Getz about that and just kind of, what he said for the last, year and a half about wanting to move Luis Robert. So, I think it's a fine part. I think the Steven Wilson part of it's more interesting, but,
Yeah, I'm with you. The Steven Wilson thing was a little odd, especially when we're looking at possible contributors this coming season. And, again, we have this plethora of injuries that the White Sox are overcoming and guys are getting back in the, you know, the swing of things and trying to come back for the 2026 season. And there's going to be some growing pains along with coming back from these injuries. And we hope that these guys come back healthy, but there's never a guarantee, right? Even as much as, you know, Tommy John surgeries have progressed and as much as rehabilitation has progressed and guys are getting back to work quicker than they ever have before after, you know, a potentially serious injury. It just seems like you had a guy who gave you some pretty solid efforts last year and they were willing to get rid of him. They must see something in Pereira because obviously when he was on the free, when he was in the international free agent market, you know, he was one of the higher graded guys coming over. He had a lot of big potential, big high ceiling. And, you know, his double A and triple A numbers were, I mean, jump off the page type numbers. Right. And you're expecting big things from this guy, but you know, he struggled last year. I think that signals to me that the White Sox and the addition of some personnel, especially in coaching positions this year and last year, feel like they can pull the best out of him. And, you know, I think it's probably a cheap flyer, you know, considering that, you know, Steve Wilson is as solid as he was for the White Sox last year. There's going to be guys available that can probably fill that hole. Especially since the White Sox still have a couple of 40-man spots open. So, you know, a lot of folks are wondering why some of those spots were left open. And the only thing that tells me is they're expecting some guys to hit on the Rule 5 market here coming up in a couple weeks that they're looking to put onto a roster, possibly. Or they've got something in the works already that they know they're going to, you know, be signing some guys as well, too. So I think it shows that there's a plan. Whether or not we really understand and know what that plan is right now, there is something going on that we're looking at. And obviously, it's not going to be the big, you know, slam dunk signing that folks have been pining for so many years. But there is a plan to, you know, continue to bring in some high ceiling talent and hope to pull the best out of it. And whether or not they become future trade pieces or become part of the future themselves is, you know, still up in the air, but, it's something that I like to see, but, yeah, I mean, there's definitely something going on, right?
Yeah.
So having said that, I guess, you know, I brought up the fact that there are some 40-man spots available. And we talk about the Rule 5 a little bit. And we'll come back to some of these trades and some of the things that are going on. But I figure it's a good segue to get into it now so we can kind of lay some groundwork for, you know, what we're going to be talking about. Maybe I should have started the show with the Rule 5 stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Right. You know, I feel like we're taking a step backwards here. But there's been some questions out there, right? So Tanner McDougal and Davitt were the only two guys in the system that were protected before the deadline was met yesterday. And it left some things up in the air, right? There were questions. You know, Shane Smith was left unprotected. We got guys like Peyton Paulette, who started to finally find their footing after some struggles early on in their professional careers. You've got guys like Mason Adams, who, you know, we're a big fan of here around at Future Sox. Again, some of these guys are coming off injury. Some of these guys have had struggles in the past. We could continue to go down the list of some of the guys that have potential in this White Sox organization. But it was Davik and McDougal that were protected. McDougal was a slam dunk. I think we pretty much all expected that.
Yeah. Right?
Davitt was a guy who, you know, came over last year. A lot of folks are like, did we really need to do that? I think the answer is probably yes, because you don't want to see that piece of a mid-season trade piece, kind of just vanish without ever really getting a shot to show what they thought they had in him. So, but what are your thoughts on the rest of them? I'll give you some of mine when you go ahead and finish that up.
Yeah, it's an interesting group of guys that they didn't protect. Mason Adams is an interesting one. You know, obviously coming off with Tommy John, but you know, was a near a top 10 prospect in the White Sox system. You know, we talked about did not pitch all of last year, but was really thought to be a potential starter coming into the season. You know, Sammy Zavala's out there. No team's going to take a chance on him. I know there's been talks about him, but you got to understand if you sign a guy to the four or if you draft a guy in the rule of five, you have to play that guy in the majors the entire season. Zavala has never gotten higher than single A, so there's no way a team's going to move him up. Paulette I thought was interesting, but he had a pretty disappointing 25. I think there's been some overreactions. Obviously, Shane Murphy is the big one. You know, 1.66 ERA last year, but the strikeout numbers weren't great. He's not a very projectable arm. He's just a guy who gets outs, and sometimes those guys work, and sometimes those guys don't. So I don't hate the moves, and like we've talked about a little bit, you know, there's still some openings there. There will be more signings, and obviously the White Sox probably had the greatest success of anybody, maybe of all time, in the Rule of Five last season when they picked Shane Smith and then ended up with Mike Vassell after a trade.
Yeah, you know, so Shane Smith to me is a big one because I feel like there's just no way he doesn't get scooped. Right? Yeah. There's Peyton Paulette. I feel like there's a lot of folks that were like, whoa, 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 what are we doing here? You know, obviously a high draft guy, you know, a few years back, big high ceiling potential and struggled pretty mightily early on. Found some consistency moving into a bullpen role and really has become somebody who you get excited about a little bit again. I understand that, but I think that because he hasn't had, you know, a full season of being in AAA and doing the things that he started to do just in this past year, I think the White Sox feel like he's probably okay being unprotected. I don't know that if they're planning on keeping him in a bullpen role, if they're going to move him back to, you know, trying to stretch him out to be a starter. But I don't see teams taking a chance on a guy with such a short window of success and having to keep them on their 26 man for the season. Now, on the contrary, we talk about Mason Adams, right? He's just been a huge fan. We're huge fans of him here at Future Sox. And that one kind of perplexes me a little bit. Yes, he's coming off an injury. Yes, he missed last season, you know, due to Tommy John. And the thing with him is he's been throwing, right? It's been reported that he's throwing, he's feeling better. And Rule 5, if I'm not mistaken, now, I felt like I had a pretty good grasp on Rule 5, and maybe I'm wrong, but Rule 5, like, you can select a guy on Rule 5 and put him on a 90-day IL. He's still got to meet his 90 days on the roster, on the active, you know, roster where he's actually gaining time. But these guys can scoop him up and not have to start him day one of the season. And that scares me. Because now, let's just say he's not stretched out and he's not ready to be the starting pitcher, you can keep him on your roster by waiting until he is ready. Give him that 90-day DL stint. Put him on your roster for another 90 days where he's actually actively, you know, on the 26-man and in the bullpen waiting to go. And you make him a bullpen arm and you stretch him out slowly. And that's a guy that I felt like needed some protecting.
Yeah, he'll be an interesting one. There's another couple of interesting pieces. We talked about Davitt, but the other piece that was brought in that trade was Ben Peoples. He wasn't protected. Sorry. The key piece in the why do the White Sox and the Rays keep making trades? Drew Baker, who was also brought in for Matt Theis. They've made three trades now in the last, like, 9 months. Drew Baker, who is a center field prospect, brought over for Matt Theis. He was not protected. I don't expect either of those guys to go somewhere, but I think there's a at least a 1% chance that those guys could be on the move. So we'll kind of see what happens there.
Yeah. I'm not going to say that they don't know what they're doing, but that one scares me. That one definitely scares me. This is a homegrown, you have developed this guy pretty much since his day one of his professional career. And he has shown some major talent, regardless of being, injured for the last season. Definitely one that I am not feeling great about leaving unprotected at the moment. But again, it's a new regime. There's obviously some new coaching and new coordinators that are part of the White Sox organization in the last year or two. They may have different feelings than we do, but if there isn't a solid structured plan, I feel that could be a very, very costly miss. But that is that's just my two cents. And what do I know? James Coogan, I'm going to go back into the chat a little bit here. He asked a great question, and I'm going to leave this one for you. I have thoughts, but I kind of want to hear what you got to say, and I'll interject as I see fit. But he asks, just curious why they left Tim Elko on the 40-man.
Yeah, I mean, someone would take a chance on him. I would think somebody would take a chance on him. The other issue is the Sox legitimately do not have a first baseman in the organization. At least one that's playing first base, they do, but not high profile anyway. Shout out. I'm going to say the wrong name. I always get them confused, but I know there's one that went to Arizona Fall League, and he's been very good in the White Sox organization, very underrated. But the Sox are lacking at the first base, and somebody will take a chance on the power of Tim Elko and try to turn that bat around. And also, he's a clubhouse guy. I just, obviously he's going to miss all of next season, or at least a good chunk of it with that ACL. But I'm not shocked.
That's the big question. That's the huge question for me right now. So you've got a guy who's got a torn ACL. He just had surgery, and he's going to be shut down for quite a long time. There's no need for him to be on the 40 man. There's no need to leave him protected. Nobody's scooping this guy up right now. That yes, would somebody actually take an opportunity to see what they can get out of him? See if they can kind of teach him not to strike out, 300 times a season, or at least what we're looking at projections for MLB career. The main thing for me is the White Sox never really gave him a full opportunity when they did call him up. So, obviously if we're just looking at numbers, the numbers aren't great, right? He never got an opportunity to get comfortable on the MLB roster. The things he's done in the minors, he hits monster bombs. I've heard folks compare him to Daniel B. Polka part two because, he'll hit monster bombs, but he don't do much else. Defensively, he's not awful. He's not, I don't know if he's a gold glove defender, but he's not terrible. But he's got some learning, some too, and the injury. I just don't think anybody takes him on an injury. I think you could have freed up that spot to, protect somebody else at this point. But it's difficult to kind of put a finger on what their thoughts are right now because some of it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm a known Tim Elko hater, so I try not to be – and then I went to his MLB debut game and felt kind of bad. And he's a really nice guy, so I kind of just hate hating on the guy constantly. But as a strictly baseball sense, I don't see it with him.
No, not at all. Not at all. There was a question in here earlier, too. I believe it was by James again. I'm not sure. I have to go way back into the chat. But somebody was asking who we thought the White Sox would take in the Rule 5 draft. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't even had time to speculate on that. I know the Facebook White Sox groups are all kind of throwing stuff out there, and I haven't even had a moment to kind of get into what they're talking about, what those conversations are. Have you heard anything as far as targets for the White Sox in the Rule 5 draft? Is there anybody out there that you would in particularly like to see come here?
Yeah, Reggie Crawford. He's an interesting look for me. He was floated somewhere on social media. Huge K guy, huge walk rate guy. Obviously, I would assume he was drafted at 21, so he's got experience with Bannister and San Fran. 24-year-old right-handed pitcher. I think there's a legitimate thought there. He's also a two-way guy. He was drafted as a two-way player. He has not played the offensive side, but missed all of 25. So again, you're talking about an injury guy, but has a career minor league ERA of 2.89. So, and maybe that's the thought with not releasing or with releasing Adams, as if you could kind of replace him with Reggie Crawford, maybe. That's your thought there. But he was a bullpen piece in 24. He's probably got closer upside if you can figure out the walks.
Well, command is always a thing. And that's the last issue you want to have with a closer. If you can figure that out. I mean, the reality is a closer's got to be a guy who can throw strikes in the zone, but not be right dead center of the zone. We saw that problem with Zach Birdie, who a guy we all thought was going to be a monster closer, and turns out he couldn't throw a ball with any kind of movement on it whatsoever. Yeah, he threw hard, but it was straight as an arrow. And in this day and age, with all the technology that these guys have to work on, and guys being able to catch up to 100, 101, 102 mile an hour fastballs, if they don't move at all, a lot of them are going to go out of the park. And then the issue is with command is if you're putting guys on base as a closer, last thing you want is a white knuckle ride, right? You might be able to close out a game, but your whip is two because you're walking two guys and right. You're striking out the next three. So it's not ideal, but yeah, I could see the potential for it whatsoever. I'd put a comment up here. Uncle Ted has been chirping about TJ Rumsfeld from the Yankees. Or Rumfield from the Yankees for a better part of the show so far, at least the last 15 minutes or so. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, 25-year-old first baseman, former 12th-round pick. I mean, listen, .825 OPS last year is always interesting. He did that at the AAA level. So, he makes sense. It depends on what the White Sox want to do in free agency. I'm always hesitant to give them another infielder in general that has to stay on the roster. If you're going to take one there, I don't hate it. I know there's been talks. They've had talks with first baseman.
There's been rumors around Rhys Hoskins
lately. Yeah, Hoskins and O'Hearn have been the two that I've heard. Clearly there's a want to bring in a first baseman. Obviously, there isn't a true first baseman on the roster, but we'll see. Yeah, Rumfield makes sense. I think pitcher is easier as a 40 man. Sorry, not to, or as a full five.
Yeah, pitchers are a little bit easier. I think that's probably where their focus is going to be, Rule 5. But if you are going to go after a Yankees prospect, or a Yankees guy, anybody in their system, more often than not, we find out that Yankees prospects are just overhyped. There's just something about New York that writers seem to love. And then you come to find out that when a guy's got a high ceiling, it's his floor that he reaches more often than not, right? You might find a middle ground with these guys. They never seem to reach their ceiling. And the guys that are going to reach their ceiling, the Yankees hug those guys. They keep them in their system. They don't let them go. They don't trade them. They don't leave them protected. So anytime that there's a guy that's unprotected, it leaves me with a little bit of pause because and it's not just the White Sox that this happens to. Anybody they trade away to anywhere seems to not produce the way you had hoped was going to happen. And that's the only issue I have with that, but I do actually kind of like TJ Rumfield. He is a little bit older, which, the old saying is development isn't linear, right? So maybe it takes a guy a little bit longer to find his place, find his way. And he did do some nice things. So the other thing is, and I think it was mentioned in the chat, I didn't see who it was, but somebody brought up that he's 6'5". Decent size. I mean, you know, we're going from Andrew Vaughn, who was listed at like 6'1", which I don't think he was more than like 5'9", 5'10". Or yeah, he was listed at 6'2". He might have been 5'10". You know.
No shot.
He might have been close to 6 foot with cleats on. You know what I mean? I don't know. And, you know, I'm happy for him for what he did with Milwaukee last year and in finding his way. He did come back down to earth for a good part of that, which is, you know, typical of Andrew Vaughn. And, you know, the guy that he replaced is the guy that the White Sox are now kind of, you know, supposedly courting, right? They're supposedly in talks in the Rhys Hoskins targeting camp. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see if they target an actual free agent or if they take him in Rule 5. This is one of those Yankees prospects that I won't be, you know, extremely mad at if we did get him. The other part of that is Merkin just recently, he's going to come out and, you know, doing Merk things. He's doing his thing as a White Sox beat reporter, and I respect him more than probably most of the national guys when it comes to the White Sox team, because Merkin spends most of his time covering the White Sox, obviously. He mentions that Sosa still needs a place, and he does believe that he's part of the future of this team. He does believe that even though there are teams interested in him, he believes that he stays with the White Sox. He even said something along the effects like he deserves an apology from the fans who kind of, you know, were down on him. He mentions that he was reminded by some folks that follow prospects more. I'm going to guess that was our guys. Mr. Ian in particular, who's had some conversations with Merk, including face-to-face at Sox Fest and 108 Day last year, about Sosa, you know, kind of falling down a little bit every time he gets promoted and struggling to find his way. And once he gets a little bit of consistency, he kind of comes around. And Merk admitted that, you know, he wasn't exactly on board with that. And he was glad that he was given an opportunity to show out this year, but he's missing a position. You know, it sounds like Chase Meadroth, unless the White Sox, you know, one of these guys that they pick up for the middle infield this year finds their way, Chase Meadroth is pretty much going to be in that hole, right, as of right now anyway, right? And they don't want to play Teal and Carroll together. Venable has said that he didn't like doing that last year. He didn't like having both of them in the lineup on most days together. So that leaves a spot for a DH, right? Or a first baseman. And if Lenin Sosa doesn't get traded away and you want to continue his development and continue his growth, you've got to find ways to keep him in the lineup, right? So does that open up a spot at first base for him? Or do you try to see if he can garner the focus of a DH without actually playing in the field?
Yeah, my issue with Lenin is his defense isn't bad. Like, legitimately, I think he's a pretty okay second baseman. If you look at the underlying numbers, he had some of the worst timed errors I've ever seen.
I think he was just really credited with actual 4 errors at second base.
Yeah, they just came at the worst points. And I know he made some dumb, like, there's part of this where, really, with Lenin, I'm not worried about the defense. I think he could be an okay second baseman. If he could learn how to walk, he'd be a perennial all-star. I would so much rather him focus on that part of his game than the defense. The defense is fine. If he could learn how to take a walk, he had the worst walk rate in the MLB last year among qualified hitters.
And still ended up right around the league average OPS plus.
Yeah. Like, he's a really talented hitter. Guys with his build and that makeup don't hit 21 home runs very often. He's a rare talent at second base, and he's not that old. I prefer him to Chase Meadroth. I know that's a hot take within the fan base. you know, I would, if you're going to trade one of those two, I'd much rather trade my drop. I've drawn this comparison before. It's an awful comparison. I get it. But like, he kind of feels like Marcus Semien. There's a little bit of that to his game where like, there's not many second basemen that can hit 30 home runs, and he is one of them. I'm much more worried about him not walking than I am him playing defense.
Yeah. And the other part of that, and I don't know if you have to credit Ron Washington for this, but you know, Semien was a butcher in the field his first couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And is all of a sudden found himself a glove to go along with the power stroke and the hitting for decent average and getting on base and stealing bases and doing all the things that he's supposed to do from the offensive side. He was horrible. He was horrendous as a fielder. And now he's a better than average.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know the only difference that I see in comparison with between him and Lenin, and granted, Lenin's only 25, right? Yeah. There's still room to grow. Marcus was a little bit younger when he made his way through and he was dealing with some of those issues, but not by much. So I don't know, man, I'm still on the Lenin Sosa bandwagon. I know a lot of folks are hating on it. I don't really care. I watched this guy since he came up and I feel like there's still big potential for him. And I don't think he's quite unlocked everything yet.
100%.
And I have not been paying attention to the chat because we have just been going. Uncle Ted says trade Corey Lee and Kyle Teal. Trade Carroll for a haul. So he wants to trade all three.
No catchers. Of our catchers.
we're not going to have any catchers. Like, what's going on, dude? I'm guessing he means like trade one of them or package Teal and Lee together. I don't know. I don't think you do all three or two. I don't even think you do two of the three. Honestly, you can't. No. You know, we already saw the White Sox trade Ronnie earlier. What was it, yesterday? I mean, obviously the Getz philosophy of catching is gold. That's part of it, is being able to trade a guy and get something in return for him. Do I see them trading Carroll? It better be a monster package. This guy's got all the markings of a solid starting catcher for a long time in the Major League Baseball. I really like Kyle Teal a lot. You know, I think there's something to be said about that. But I think that having a really solid backup catcher is just as important as having a good starting catcher in the major leagues if you want to be successful these days. And I find it difficult to trade either one of those guys unless obviously the ask has got to be met. And
The issue with those two is they platoon very well together. I mean, Teal mashes righties, Carroll mashes lefties. So you kind of do that. And you know, I think those two. Now, Lee makes a lot of sense. I have floated the trade idea that Boston's going to be giving up an outfielder here this offseason, whether it's Willier Abreu or Jaron Duran. Both of them make extreme sense for the White Sox. I would love that trade. If you have to give up Caro in that deal, I think it makes sense. That's a situation where it makes sense to make that deal. I know Uncle Ted has put in Geraldo Perdomo. Perdomo will not be traded. He is the best contract in baseball. He finished third in MVP voting. Also, the Sox do not need a shortstop.
So I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to pull that comment up next. Having a top shortstop is more important. Did we not pay attention to what Colson Montgomery did in his first half a season up with the White Sox? And we can say that, you know, he struggled a little bit, but he hit a bunch of dingers. He doesn't walk. That is not his game.
Yeah.
His game. He's had a very patient eye in the past. They worked on his swing last year. They sent him all the way back to Arizona before making his way up to the major league team. Everybody early on in the season thought he was going to fall on his face. And he came up and he did some pretty big things with only a half a season under his belt. Let's pump the brakes on that. That's, you know, not giving him credit and time to develop even more. He's still a young guy. And he's got potential. And I've said it before, and I'm gonna say it again. I believe he's our number one all-star prospect. Him and Carroll are probably the two all-star guys I'm looking to see next season for the White Sox on the position side, position player side. I believe Colson Montgomery is going to show everybody the guy who he was in the minor league system when he actually was walking and he was taking pitches and he was giving himself the opportunity for more hitters' pitches and continuing to drive the ball, all while getting on base more often. I think you guys are going to be extremely, extremely happy with his performance coming up here in the next season.
Yeah, not to mention they have two shortstops in the pipeline that I don't know what they're going to do with. No, they definitely need corner outfield way more than any really outfield in general, more than anything in the infield. Yeah, that's why I think a trade for Duran or whatever you make sense.
You know, and we look at the list of shortstops that the White Sox drafted last season. I believe some of those guys are going to be transition to outfielders. I believe Colson sticks at shortstop for at least a couple of seasons before, you know, maybe obviously he is still young. He's probably still going to continue to grow as most major leaguers do at his age. And yeah, maybe he does make the transition to third at some point, but I don't see that coming anytime in the near future. I see at least two more seasons, if not more, before that happens. And he played really solid defense there last year as well, too. So that's a solidified position. That's I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, like the thing with Colson is everybody wants to, you know, talk about the home runs, but like he was a top five defensive shortstop in baseball last, you know, after he debuted in terms of outs above average. Like that's the type of defender he was there. I mean, there's a legitimate chance Colson Montgomery is a 7-8 win player next year. Like that's not impossible. He put up 3 WAR and
that's lofty, but I like it.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of where he projects in terms of if you're just going to take this half season, and obviously you know anything can happen. This is baseball; nothing's guaranteed. But like that's kind of where he projects in terms of WAR next year at shortstop.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
Yeah, I agree. Wolf brings up, and we haven't talked a lot about the draft coming up here.
When's the lottery?
First week of December. It's supposed to be right towards the end of the GM meetings. If I'm not mistaken, I want to say it's like maybe the second week of December, like the 8th or 9th, somewhere in there. So looking forward to that. We get Rule 5 draft and the draft lottery all happening right in that time frame. So big things coming up here, just a few weeks away. And we have another big event coming up that first week of December too, which is Danny's 50th birthday is December 5th. I've been feeling a little like, what? You know, they say 40 was over the hill, and I'm like, oh, 50? What? Half a century, dude. But you know what?
This 11 days later.
Not bad. I'll take it. Not bad for 50.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, that's going to be an exciting week for all of
You're
us.
You're the 5th?
Yeah, December 5th. I'll be 50 years
old.
I'm
the 16th.
Ah, Sagittarius unite, man.
Yeah, right?
All right. Jamie asks where Vargas is going to be playing, and right now there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be your starting third baseman at the beginning of the season this year, unless we see oh god, what's his name's going to escape me now, the guy that they
Curtis
had.
Mead.
There you go, thank you. The Curtis Mead is still part of this team currently. There is a chance that, you know, if Vargas gets traded, which again I wanted to bring up, that there has been reports that there is interest in Vargas. And the White Sox are taking calls. I've said it in the past, I'll say it again. Any GM worth his salt is going to take calls on everybody. So when we hear that, you know, you're getting calls on Carroll, which again, I find highly unlikely unless the package is an absolute bomb. I don't see him going anywhere, but you're going to take those calls, right? Yeah. You have to. You got to see what people are offering. And if there's something that can change the organization, you got to consider those. So I don't know that that's going to be the case for the calls that they're taking on Vargas. My particular thoughts on Vargas, I'm still not sold on him. I do like the improvement that I saw out of him last year, but I need to see more from him. And he's still young enough to do that. But and I'm not trying to crap on the guy. I just haven't been super high on him from the very beginning. And it's maybe because I, you know, read some stuff from Dodger bloggers rather than some of the experts, the so-called experts out there. But, you know, I think as of right now, unless there's a change, he's going to be your starting third baseman next year.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I would rather him play first. The defense was not great at third. The early numbers were good, but it deteriorated. And going back on the trade calls, like, you know, not to bring this out of the MLB, but like, I don't know if the Lakers were shopping Anthony Davis, but you know, you offer Luka Doncic and all of a sudden that looks like a pretty solid trade. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Any trade's a good trade if it makes your team better. So,
right. Right. Obviously this White Sox being in a rebuild and then the impending work stoppage, which I mean, there's no avoiding it at this point. It's just a matter of how long that work stoppage is going to be next year. I shouldn't say next year, following the 2026 season. That's going to get a little interesting, but again, I think it's probably a very good excuse. I won't even call it an excuse, but it's a good reason that the White Sox aren't going to go out and shop real big right now. And you know, you've got to get these guys. Chris Gatt said it himself. The young core is what their focus is on. They want to get these guys playing together as much as possible and get them more comfortable together, and then they will, you know, they'll kind of take a look at where they're at coming up after probably this season. I would say next year, depending on how long that that lockout goes, maybe we start to see a little bit of motion in some more direct top free agent or maybe even top tier trade partners, you know, and availability of those guys. Yeah, it could be organization changers and team changers to get you in the win column more often. But I as much as we want a pipe dream and say, you know what, like the rumor, I'll just bring it up now. The rumor that Kyle Schwarber is being targeted by the White Sox. Have you heard this one just recently? I want to say in the last 2 days, it's come out that the White Sox are in the Kyle Schwarber market. Have you heard this?
I mean, what is his market? Because there was also another rumor that the Pirates are interested. And if the Pirates and the White Sox are interested in you as a free agent, your number cannot be that high. Yeah, that was a bizarre. There's been some bizarre reporting about his name for a guy who finished what, second in MVP voting.
Yeah, you know what? We might need to get. I mean, dude, listen, it would be fantastic. But you'd have to lock him up for a few seasons. He's not going to come here for a year, yeah. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, this is a guy who's produced and he's done a lot in the playoffs, the postseason for, you know, every team that he's played for that's gone to the postseason. And he's just been a, I don't know, you want to call him like, they called, what's his name? The other guy from the Cubs, El Mago. But, you know, I don't know, man. Kyle Schwarber is a magician in the postseason. And if you want to bring that kind of, if you want to bring that player into the White Sox, if that's the one guy you want to go out and get right now, I'm good with that, because now you're talking about a young core that needs a veteran leader, somebody to be that veteran voice in the clubhouse who's got that postseason experience to get you, even if he's not part of that team when they make it to the postseason 3, 4, 5 years from now, right? God, I hope it's not that long. But, you know, you want that guy that's there that knows how to get you to that point and keep guys' head in the right places. So maybe Chris Gress can sprinkle a little bit of fairy dust out there and, you know, see what we can get for
Walshow, haven't you?
What's that?
Yeah, so you've been trying to set that up all show, haven't you?
No.
Oh.
No.
Just a well-timed man.
So.
All right. By the way, everything you just described also describes Carlos Santana, which I think makes a ton of sense for the White Sox.
Cheaper.
I don't love it, but I just, that's the White Sox signing, Carlos Santana.
Cheaper, for sure.
That's an understatement.
And I also believe that, you know, Schwarber's probably got more left in the tank than Carlos, but
I'd sure hope so. You know, Kyle Schwarber's only like 29. That can't be right. Hold on. He's young.
No. He's in his, I want to say he's like 33, 34.
If my been around. Work.
I mean, dude, he's
having a great day.
He was part of the 2016 World Series with the Cubs. Where the hell did you go? Did we lose Jacob? All right, don't make me bust out the music again. I don't know where he went. All right, while we're waiting for Jacob to come back, I'm going to address some of this stuff I'm seeing in the chat. I'm going to go back a little bit. So Wolf asks, and I saw this pop up a little bit ago, I don't know, 3-4 minutes ago or so. Will there be open competition for second base in the spring? Mydroth, Antonacci, and Sosa. And that's, to me, that's a fantastic question. Wolf, I'm going to say this, you know, obviously as it stands right now, the guy with the most time in the second half of the season at second base was Chase Mydroth. Sosa bounced around quite a bit, but Chase seemed to kind of stay there. I want to say that it's probably his spot to lose at the moment unless something changes. But, yeah, there's definitely going to be competition come spring. And I do believe Sam Antonacci is going to be in that mix for competition. I just don't know that they're going to force him up that quickly. You know, Arizona Fall League typically is guys who needed the extra time. They want the extra development. So I'm not rushing Antonacci up in the beginning of the season. But, you know, stranger things have happened, obviously. I think the competition at second base right now as it stands is Mydroth and Sosa, unless they decide not to go after a first baseman in free agency and give Sosa more time at first base. And I believe Antonacci is probably a guy who stays in the minors for at least, you know, the beginning of the season. Give him some more time at AAA to let him see what he can do and, you know, continue his development. And then, you know, if he continues doing what he's been doing, especially the last few months, I would say that there's a good chance that we do see him maybe even before the midseason deadline. You know, it just depends on how he forces the hand of Chris Getz and Will Venable. So I'm sorry, Jacob, while you were gone.
You're sorry.
I gave you a little sad trumpet, and we were talking about Wolf. I believe it was. I lost it now.
You're right. I saw the comment.
Yeah, Wolf was asking about competition for second base. You got any thoughts on that?
Depends on who they trade, or if they trade. I don't know what you said about Antonacci, but he's the most interesting of the bunch. Also, the kid they just traded for is a
potentially
interesting option at second base.
So yeah, and I'm losing my mind on his name. Give me 1 second here.
Hudson, I think, or is that the
Tanner Murray? Tanner Murray is the guy that it was part of the Stephen Wilson Yoenis Gomez trade yesterday.
Yeah.
He came over with Everson Pereira. And again, Rays guy. Rays obviously known for developing talent. So, and I'm going to pull up some numbers on Murray here real quickly. We're just going to throw them out there. So since 2021. He's had 1,700 plate appearances, 160 extra base hits. 325 BABIP. I mean, the guy's, you know, I don't know, he's...
He had a 122 WRC plus at AA last year. Like, he's not a nobody.
Now, I'm looking for a little more clutch. I don't know. He does seem to leave a lot of guys on base from what I read in an article. How was it? Last night, really this morning. I don't even remember anymore. But I did read something up on him, and for some reason, it's like when the pressure's on with guys on base, it tends not to move runners. But defensively, pretty solid glove. And, you know, for the most part, if we're going to look at, you know, like on-base percentage and batting average, intriguing. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to be in the mix at the beginning of the season, but he's a guy to keep an eye on throughout the year.
Yeah.
So we're almost an hour in here, Jake. Is there anything? Oh, I know we haven't talked about
him. Sir Popperton.
What's that?
Sir Popperton.
Yeah. Did you see this?
This is the craziest article I've ever seen. The article comes out today. It's written by Clay Travis. My apologies. And it's talking about like how the Pope wants to throw out a first pitch. And like four paragraphs in, they just drop the at the expected White Sox new stadium. That seems the most important part of this story.
This is what I wanted to talk about.
How big the Pope is. Like, the Pope's a big character, but like, what's going on with the stadium? I was reading the article because I was like, oh, this is interesting. This is getting engagement on X. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, that's important. Yeah, that was a bizarre article.
Well, and you know, the thing is it was said that Ishbia asked for a blessing on the potential new stadium. And what does that mean? Does that mean, I mean, are we basically saying it's coming, it's happening? There's no, like, we know the works are out there for the 78, you know, all the artist renderings and whatnot. Now the owners of the 78 have the Fire Stadium there now, the Chicago Fire Stadium. They're saying they don't want more than one stadium there, but money talks, right? And Ishbia is not shy when it comes to money. So are we potentially looking at maybe sooner rather than later? Is that a hint at, you know, maybe Jerry relinquishing his shares before? Like, a lot of folks thought, you know, we had this like 6-year window, right? Or however many year window it was that it was talked about where, you know, Ishbia would, you know, take controlling interest. Is this a hint that window might be opening sooner rather than on the back end of that 6-year timeline? What do you think? Like, does this talk to you at all?
Yeah, it's interesting because if Ishbia were to build a stadium now, it would almost certainly have to be privately funded. There have been issues in the state of Illinois of getting public funding for these stadiums. Go ask the Bears about that. It's been an issue. I'm not going to touch that, but if it's privately funded, is that then Ishbia's stadium that he owns? Or is it the stadium that the Chicago White Sox as a business own? Because if Ishbia is going to fully fund it, which would be the case, I would assume he's got a background in real estate. He's the one who's talking to the Pope about it. If he fully builds it and then it's owned by the White Sox as a corporation, that would then add on to his sale price. So is it just going to be Ishbia Stadium? And then once he has control over the team, the White Sox that are playing there, I don't know how that's going to work. That's something that'll be interesting to figure out. And people a lot smarter than me will figure out. The reason for that is he going to build it now, or is Ishbia going to wait till he takes over earliest in 29 to start building the stadium.
Is he going to buy all the owners out of their shares? Is he going to be a sole owner? Is he going to bring his brother in to partner with them? Maybe the two of them put their money together and become sole owners of the Chicago White Sox is my question. And reason being is because obviously if you're going to spend a good chunk of your money on that stadium, I think, you know, obviously there's probably ways to work out these contracts with the other parts of the ownership, right? The ownership group. You know, you can contract like, hey, team valuation might include this stadium when it comes time, you know, years and years, hopefully many, many years down the road. When you have the second richest owner in baseball or, you know, third richest owner in baseball on your ownership group, you know, we hope to keep that guy around for a while and inject some money and, you know, some good vibes into this ball club. Obviously good vibes is a thing for him because he's personally visiting the Pope, but you know, you wonder if he can work out a contract where there's some agreement that, you know, in the future, if you want to continue to be a shareholder, your stake in the stadium doesn't really count, or you've got to come up with part of the investment money yourself. But this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to build a stadium. It's up to you whether or not you want to invest in that stadium with me, right? I don't know if he's trying to force hands or what, but it's definitely an interesting concept. James, I believe 2029 is it 2029 or 2030? 2030 might be the last year in the stadium, or maybe it's also 2020.
Where are they going to put this thing? That's I think the wicked. That's the question of it all. Is A, when's it going to be built, and B, where is it going?
Well, that's
all. My thought is you should just build it right on top of Comiskey Park and call it a day. But
you want to move it back across the street?
Yes.
Like exactly old Comiskey Park?
Yes.
That's hallowed ground, man. It's a lot of old school folks are gonna they're gonna poo poo on that, man. But you know, it's been what now 35 years since this current stadium has been built. Wow, are you kidding me? I went to the very first game at that stadium as a freshman in high school.
I was 10 years out.
You weren't even born yet.
I had 10 years to go. I was.
St. Rita used to do a walkathon for the opening day at White Sox games because they knew that if they didn't do something that their attendance was going to be, that was cut day at St. Rita. That was cut day. Going back to when St. Rita was still on, 63rd. And then they moved over to the new campus on 79th and Western. And, man, they turned it into a walkathon. You know, all the kids went out and got donations for this walkathon for charity. And by taking part in that, you got a free ticket to the White Sox game. So we walked from school to the White Sox game because attendance was going to be garbage anyway. So just a little bit of history on that for you. But 35 years. And I do believe it was a 40-year lease. So I think it's at the end of 2029 is when that contract is up. So for the 2030 season is the hope to have a new stadium built and ready to go.
They better figure that out pretty soon then.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of where my head is like maybe we need to, you know, maybe Ishbia is like, I don't have time to wait.
Maybe that's what he's like, working on. I mean,
he's making deals with Jerry in the background right now. Like, we need to move this timeline along.
Yeah.
But that was the interesting part of the article. It's not that he went and met the Pope and asked for his blessing. It's the fact that he asked for a blessing on a new stadium. Yeah. Come throw out a first pitch.
That article was bizarrely written. I couldn't. It was like the fourth paragraph in. It was like, I expected at the White Sox new stadium. And I was like mind blown that they would had, like, that was the big part of that article. Okay. No shots to Pope. I get, you know, large.
James asks, wouldn't they have to start breaking ground soon? I don't know. I would say it's probably going to take probably, in the neighborhood of 2 years.
2 years.
2 years. We're looking at like the A's right now, you know, moving to Vegas. And I just recently saw that the shape of the bowl is already starting to come together in Vegas for the Athletics. So it might be a good way to get your bearings on how long a project of that, you know, might take, especially if it's going to be like mixed use development, like what they're talking about with the 78, because that's what they're doing. They're making a whole, you know, they're making it a whole complex over there in Vegas. So obviously Vegas doesn't need a restaurant district around a stadium. They've got everything they could possibly want. But just to see a stadium come together, I think that's probably a good way to judge how long it's going to take. So I'm going to keep my eye on that. But yeah, man, I would say at minimum, at the very latest, they would have to break ground in early 2028 to be ready for the season in 2030, if not sooner. So,
which means your deal has to be done a year before that. So you're talking end of 27 would be the latest that you could have.
Which makes me kind of think this has got to be Ishbia trying to make deals. Like, you know, I can't imagine somebody with his kind of money is going to sit and wait too long. And let's not, you know, forget the fact that Jerry Reinsdorf is not a spring chicken. You know, things could happen at any given moment. Not to say that I ever wish that on anybody. He's not my favorite owner, never has been. But, you know, I don't wish any ill will on him other than, you know, please just get rid of the damn team. Give up your control and move on, dude. Like, haven't you had enough? 45 years, dude. Enough's enough, bro. Let somebody else take over.
I'm not a Jerry fan, but he might be one of the better looking 89-year-olds in the world. Yeah. He looks like he's 70.
Well, I mean, when you got that kind of money.
I know. But jeez.
Probably easier to, you know, easier to live. And when you really come out and you say things like, you know, being in second place, you know, unconfirmed, but being in second place and keeping your fans on the hook, you're not really stressing out about winning.
Yeah.
He's probably even pretty good. Just saying. So, yeah, I think we'll end it on that because I don't want to say anything bad about anybody other than you've been a terrible baseball owner. Just give it up. That's it. I'll leave it at that. So,
yeah.
You got any hot takes or heaters for us at the output or the outro of the show here?
Sure. Robert, Caro, Teal, Sosa are all in the 26 to begin next year.
I'll take that. I don't know if I have any real major other than, man, hot takes, heaters. I'll give Chris Getz a heater for go ahead and really kicking off the hot stove. There hasn't been any real big signings out there. Nah, I shouldn't say that. But, you know, he moved basically six players in two deals yesterday. So, yeah, I'll give him a little bit of heater on it. None of them earth-shattering, but, you know, it's a move. And it's not even Thanksgiving. So
they clearly have a timeline in place of what they want to get done when.
There seems to be some sort of plan. What that plan is, I'm not exactly sure. Like I said, I have questions. We address that, but excuse me. I didn't have time to even hit my cough button there. But yeah, we'll wrap it up here, man. Again, I say it every week, but I want to give a big shout out to our commenters and our chatters. You guys are the best. New, old, guys that are, you know, regulars, guys that check in once in a while. You guys are awesome. we put out a timeline of what we're going to do on our show, or not even a timeline, but some topics that we want to talk about. But really, you guys end up driving the content for us. We much appreciate that. If you guys want to show us your appreciation, please hit that like button, subscribe, do it on our YouTube channel, do it on the Purple app, do it on all of our people here at Future Sox's X/Twitter profiles and pages. We much appreciate you. As always, Super Chats are open on any of our live shows, so we appreciate donations there. If you guys like any of our written content, you can find that at futuresox.net, as well as you'll see the guys post that stuff on our Twitter feed as well. If you like the exclusive content, you can find that behind a paywall at futuresox.net for a $2 a month Patreon donation as well. We appreciate you guys. We really, really do. We will be back here next Wednesday, hopefully with some bigger news. But so far, it's been an eventful offseason early on, even if it hasn't been anything huge. We'll come back and report. We'll see you guys all next week, 8 p.m. As always, for my co-host Jacob Thone on X at JThome21, I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X. We'll see you guys next week at Wednesday, 8 p.m. And as always, go White Sox.